studio, viewed from the large window. The outer door is in the wall on the left at the near end. The door leading to the inner rooms is in the opposite wall at the far end. The facing wall has neither window nor door. The plaster on all the walls is uncovered and undecorated, except by scrawlings of charcoal sketches and memoranda. There is a studio throne, a chair on the dais, a little to the left, opposite the inner door, and an easel to the right, opposite the outer door, with a dilapidated chair at it. Near the easel and against the wall is a bare wooden table with bottles and jars of oil and medium, paint-smudged rags, tubes of color, brushes, charcoal, a small figure, a kettle, and spirit lamp, and other odds and ends. By the table is a sofa, littered with drawing blocks, sketchbooks, loose sheets of paper, newspapers, books, and more smudged rags. Next to the outer door is an umbrella and a hat stand, occupied partly by Louis' hats and cloak and muffler, and partly by odds and ends of costumes. There is an old piano stool on the near side of this door. In the corner near the inner door is a little tea table. A mannequin in a cardinal's robe and hat, with an hourglass in one hand and a scythe slung on its back, smiles with inane malice at Louis, who, in a milkman's smock much smudged with colors, is painting a piece of brocade which he has draped about his wife. She is sitting on the throne, not interested in the painting, and appealing to him very anxiously about another matter.
Promise.
I promise.
When you want money, you will always come to me.
But it's so sordid, dearest. I hate money. I can't keep always bothering you for money, money, money. That's what drives me sometimes to ask other people, though I hate doing it.
It is far better to ask me, dear. It gives people a wrong idea of you.
But I want to spare your little fortune and raise money on my own work. Don't be unhappy, love. I can easily earn enough to pay it all back. I shall have a one-man show next season, and then there will be no more money troubles. There. I mustn't do any more of that until it's bone dry, so you may come down.
Louis puts down his palette. Jennifer throws off the drapery as she steps down, revealing a plain frock of silk.
But you have promised, remember, seriously and faithfully, never to borrow again until you have first asked me.
Seriously and faithfully.
Louis embraces Jennifer.
Ah, my love, how right you are. How much it means to me to have you by me, to guard me against living too much in the sky. On my solemn oath, from this moment forth, I will never borrow another penny.
Ah, that's right. Does his wicked, worrying wife torment him and drag him down from the clouds?
Jennifer kisses him.
And now, dear, won't you finish those drawings for McLean?
Oh, they don't matter. I've got nearly all the money from him in advance.
But dearest, that is just the reason why you should finish them. He asked me the other day whether you really intended to finish them.
Confound his impudence! What the devil does he take me for? Now that just destroys all my interest in this beastly job. I've got a good mind to throw up the commission and pay him back his money.
We can't afford that, dear. You had better finish the drawings and have done with them. I think it is a mistake to accept money in advance.
But how are we to live?
Well, Louis, it is getting hard enough as it is now that they are all refusing to pay except on delivery.
Damn those fellows. They think of nothing and care for nothing but their wretched money.
Still, if they pay us, they ought to have what they pay for.
There now. That's enough lecturing for today. I've promised to be good, haven't I?
Jennifer puts her arms round his neck.
You know that I hate lecturing. And that I don't for a moment misunderstand you, dear, don't you?
I know. I know. I'm a wretch, and you're an angel. Oh, if only I were strong enough to work steadily, I'd make my darling's house a temple, and her shrine a chapel more beautiful than ever was imagined. I can't pass the shops without wrestling with the temptation to go in and order all the really good things they have for you.
I want nothing but you.
Jennifer gives him a caress, to which he responds so passionately that she disengages herself.
There, be good now. Remember that the doctors are coming this morning. Isn't it extraordinarily kind of them, Louis, to insist on coming? All of them, to consult about you.
Oh, I dare say they think it will be a feather in their cap to cure a rising artist. They wouldn't have come if I didn't amuse them anyhow. I say, it's not time yet, is it?
No, not quite yet.
Louis opens the door and finds Ridgeon there.
Hello, Ridgeon. Delighted to see you. Come in.
It's so good of you to come, Doctor.
Excuse this place, won't you? It's only a studio, you know. There's no real convenience for living here. But we pig along somehow, thanks to Jennifer.
Now I'll run away. Perhaps later on, when you're finished with Louis, I may come in and hear the verdict.
Ridgeon bows rather constrainedly.
Would you rather I didn't?
Not at all. Not at all.
Mrs. Dubedat looks at him a little puzzled by his formal manner, then goes into the inner room.
I say, don't look so grave. There's nothing awful going to happen, is there?
No.
That's all right. Poor Jennifer has been looking forward to your visit more than you can imagine. She's taken quite a fancy to you, Ridgeon. The poor girl has nobody to talk to. I'm always painting. There's a little sketch I made of her yesterday.
She showed it to me a fortnight ago when she first called on me.
Oh, did she? Good Lord, how time does fly. I could have sworn I'd only just finished it. It's hard for her here. See me piling up drawings and nothing coming in for them? Of course, I shall sell them next year fast enough, after my one-man show. But while the grass grows, the steed starves. I hate to have her coming to me for money, and having none to give her. But what can I do?
I understood that Mrs. Dubedat had some property of her own.
Oh, yes, a little. But how could a man with any decency of feeling touch that? Suppose I did. What would she have to live on if I died? I'm not insured. Can't afford the premiums.
Louis picks out another drawing.
How do you like that?
I have not come here today to look at your drawings. I have more serious and pressing business with you.
You want to sound my wretched lung. My dear Ridgeon, I'll be frank with you. What's the matter in this house isn't lungs but bills. It doesn't matter about me, but Jennifer has actually got to economize in the matter of food. You've made us feel that we can treat you as a friend. Will you lend us £150?
No.
Why not?
I am not a rich man, and I want every penny I can spare and more for my researches.
You mean you want the money back again?
I presume people sometimes have that in view when they lend money.
Well, I can manage that for you. I'll give you a check. Or see here. There's no reason why you shouldn't have your bit, too. I'll give you a check for $200.
Why not cash the check at once without troubling me?
Bless you. They wouldn't cash it. I'm overdrawn as it is. No, the way to work it out is this. I'll postdate the check next October. In October, Jennifer's dividends come in. Well, you present the check. It will be returned, marked, refer to drawer. Or some rubbish of that sort. Then, you can take it to Jennifer and hint that if the check isn't taken up at once, I shall be put in prison. She'll pay you like a shot. You'll clear £50 and you'll do me a real service. For I do want the money very badly, old chap, I assure you.
You see no objection to the transaction, and you anticipate none from me.
Well, what objection can there be? It's quite safe. I can convince you about the dividends.
I mean on the score of its being, shall I say, dishonorable?